All right, folks. What's going on? Welcome back to your favorite WMMA podcast, hashtag CB99 Talks. This is episode 115. Of course, I'm ComboBreaker99, back with another one, guys. I'm a day late, but I've been kind of busy. You know, life's been happening and crazy things been going on, but I'm back, man. Just taking care of a lot of business, but, you know, I've still been checking out some fights here and there and just looking at fight news, but, you know, had some things to do. And still got a long road ahead, man. But yeah, we back, man. So just a few topics I wanted to discuss in this episode, man. I wanted to kind of go back to LFA this past Saturday. Not too much going on. You know, there wasn't no UFC card or anything like that, but they had a few fights that I was checking out. Of course, boxing. And, you know, just some other news in the WMMA world I want to kind of touch on that I haven't really, well, I have touched on, but I feel like I haven't really, you know, went deep into some topics here, you know. So, yeah, man, we're going to get it in, guys. First up, I want to talk LFA this past, well, I'm not going to talk the whole card this past Saturday, LFA 151. I want to talk about the strawweight fight that took place, you know, another strawweight championship fight. And I know that usually whenever a new strawweight champion is crowned in WMMA, that means that somebody's probably going to get a UFC contract, right? So I want to discuss, should LFA champions, newly crowned LFA champions, should they jump straight into the UFC? All right, that's the question. And I kind of want to go over some pros and cons of that. That's first topic. And then I want to talk Alexa Grasso. This fight is around the corner, man. It's about a month away. And I want to talk about Alexa Grasso's chances a little bit, you know, just kind of, you know, go into, you know, her style and her improvements that she's been making and the momentum that she's been carrying. Is it enough to defeat Valentina Shevchenko? That's the question, right? I mean, the hardcore fans and even the Valentina simps, you know, they don't want to hear this argument. But, hey, we just got to talk about it, man. We got to talk about it because we never know what can happen in MMA, right? All right. And next topic I want to discuss is Amanda Nunes, man. Like, simple question. What is Amanda Nunes doing? That's the question right now. What is Amanda Nunes trying to do? Like, with the choices she's making and with the lack of fights being made for Amanda Nunes, like, what is she trying to do at this point? You know, what is her business move? What's her business motives, right? So let's talk about that. And last topic I want to discuss is Yasmin Hariri. You know, that was a topic we talked about a few days ago. And I want to just talk about her as a fighter, because I know some people feel like, oh, she's being overhyped. You know, is she being treated special? But we got to go into what is being treated special, you know, and we got to go into what's how a fighter is being treated special versus them being overrated. Okay. I feel like there's a difference between being overhyped and moving a fighter carefully, you know, because, yeah, I'll hold off on that because I was just about to go into it right there. But, yeah, we can hold off on that. Actually, last topic is the fights coming up this weekend. We got two flyweight fights. We got a Bellator flyweight fight, and we got a one WMMA UFC flyweight fight for this card that's coming on at, like, after midnight, all right? So, yeah, y'all know who I'm talking about. We'll get it. I'll name the fighters whenever we get into it, guys. So, yeah, man, it was an all right weekend. You know, I mean, just had a lot of crazy stuff going on, family stuff. And, you know, just one of them things, man. Like I said, it's not over yet. And, got to go through just this life, man. Just got to go through life, right? But that's what it is, man. You know, don't fight in the cage, man. But life is a fight outside, man. Be taking hits outside, but you got to get right back up. So I got to stay in shape for it, man. Yeah, boxing was on point. Artur Beterbiev got a knockout over Anthony Yard this past weekend. You know, that was an entertaining fight. So, yeah, got a chance to watch that. But, LFA 151, you know, it was a good card overall. I was looking forward to this fight here between Julia the Dragon Pulowski versus Brenda Gotig. I've actually seen both of these fighters fight before. I know some of y'all have seen Pulowski fight in the Contender Series this past year. I believe it was this past year when she took on Jazzy Vicious. I think, 125, and she lost that fight. That's how Jazzy Vicious got her contract, as y'all know. Pulowski, yeah, she's not really that big of a fighter, so I don't know how she was taking on Jazzy Vicious at flyweight, right? But, since then, you know, she's been racking up some wins. You know, she's gone on a 2-fight win streak, and, you know, she stepped it up. Got her shot at the belt against Brenda Gotig, who is an undefeated fighter. And Pulowski, man, she went in there, made a statement, got it done, showed some improvements, and got a first-round submission win via head-arm choke over Brenda Gotig. Now, I thought Brenda Gotig was going to bring a little bit more to the table. You know, I thought she was going to use her striking and use that height and that reach, but she wasn't ready for Pulowski's attack, man. I mean, Pulowski pretty much owned this fight on the ground with multiple takedowns. She just went straight in on Gotig and said, okay, she's a taller fighter. Let's get her to the ground. Every time she tried to get back up, she just would take it right back down. Just outworked her in the grappling department, landed a little bit of ground and pound till eventually she got her to the cage and she just caught her slipping. And whenever she was, Gotig was trying to get up, she just slipped that head arm choke in. Submission position right into play, forcing Gotig to tap. Now it was quick. It was just like that, man. So yeah, now we have a new LFA strawweight champion in Pulowski, man. Y'all know the previous one was Jacqueline Amorim, who won the belt over Loveth Young, and I believe she did hold the belt for like one title defense, if I remember correctly. But the question is, what's going to be next for Julia Pulowski right now? You know, because right now the UFC has been quick to sign a lot of fighters straight out of LFA. That's LFC. I mean, LFA. They continue to sign a lot of fighters right out of LFA. That's why I had to ask that question to a few people. Does this mean UFC contract, or does she do something that the past champions haven't done in LFA and defend her belt multiple times? Yeah, okay, you know, that's a big question here. Because Pulowski, I feel like she has been growing as a fighter since I've seen her, you know, before the Contender Series. After that, you know, she beat a couple of underground fighters that I've seen. And, you know, she looked solid. You know, she looked solid. So this is three wins in a row for her. On top of that, she won a belt. So right away, you know, the mindset of the fighter and a lot of fans feel like, okay, whenever a fighter grabs LFA belt, it's kind of like the Contender Series, right? It's kind of like once you win that belt, you've automatically got a contract. Right. That's how it kind of works for a lot of fighters. If you won the Invicta FC belt, for some fighters, it's like, oh, we know what's next, the UFC. But in this case, it's like once you get that belt, does it really mean you have to do that? Like, do you have to go for the UFC right away? I mean, just because you won that belt, does it really mean that you are UFC ready? I mean, it means, yeah, you are the top of that organization, but is it always smart to go that route just because you won that belt? Okay. I mean, maybe it was the level of competition, right? So that's the question I have for you guys and for myself. I was just wondering, like, should LFA champions defend their belt? Like, should they defend their belt multiple times? You know, should they hold on to it? In my opinion, I think that, yeah, I think they should. You know, I think a lot of LFA champions, or, you know, I think some of these LFA champions, like ones that are still growing, like if they just signed to LFA and maybe they made a few statements and maybe one or two fights, that they should hold on to the belt, you know, for at least like three or four fights. You know, I know that sounds greedy or that just sounds crazy because, hey, the UFC is right there and people say, oh, UFC, you know, hey, that's the organization you got to go to. That's where you got to prove yourself. No, like, yeah, that is like the organization where all the best fighters go. But to really prove that you are the best fighter, I think that you really need to rack up that type of experience, you know? So yeah, like, fighters should defend their belts multiple times, even on the regional circuit or underground circuit, because that's how you build experience. You know, that's how you build your style. That's how you craft your style and, you know, try your best to face different looks. Like if you're a grappler, you know, you want to face different type of strikers. You want to face fellow grapplers on your level that might be promising that just didn't get a chance to touch the belt, right? Or if you're a striker, you know, you can work on your takedown defense, your ground game against some of the top level wrestlers that haven't been signed to the UFC themselves, right? So defending your belt, like say you win your belt with your particular style, you know, you defeat everybody in LFA with your particular striking style or your particular grappling style. Once you win that belt, okay, now the next level is defending the belt, right? You're going to see different looks, new fighters come in, new hungry contenders coming in. That's a good way to just build up that mental, not just like your technical style, but your mental growth as well. You know, it teaches you how to fight more so under pressure. Because like they say, you know, it's easier to win a title than keeping a title. And you've seen that many a time in MMA and boxing a lot of the times. You know, these guys, they win multiple world titles. But once they have to defend it, you know, they don't know how to rise to the occasion. You know, they're chilling. You know what I mean? They go in there thinking that, oh, okay, like since I won the belt, that makes me automatically the GOAT. Or that makes me pound for pound the best. Or that makes my opponent want to bow down to me. Right. That makes him want to bow down to me. That's why I'm saying, like, for a fighter like Palustri, she has that chance right now to say, you know what? Now that I won this belt, I can do something these other champions that you see here in this picture haven't done. You know, I can go in here and say, oh, let me hold on to this belt, defend it at least two or three times and get that experience that I need. You know, get that feeling of what it feels, you know, gain that that feeling of what it's like to be a champion, you know, how to be dominant as well. Like, that's something I'm always saying. Like, that's how you see fighters like Valentina, Kamaru Usman, John Jones, all these type of champions like that, how they grow as a fighter and how they keep their belt. You know, they're always building their dimensions. They're becoming well-rounded fighters. So yeah, starting here is the best thing to do for it. You know, it's the best thing to do for it. I think out of these champions here on the picture here, I've got Demopoulos. Vanessa Demopoulos, she won the LFA belt, and she lost it right away to Lupe Godinez. But later on, you know, she went on to sign to the UFC, right? She went on to sign to the UFC, so she was another fighter that was able to win the belt, but she went straight in. And, you know, she went in to try to defend her belt against Lupe Godinez. You know, she couldn't do it. But instead of sticking around, you know, she said, I'm going to make that jump. You know, I want to go ahead and make that jump. Pierre Rodriguez, another one, won the LFA belt. She went straight into the UFC. Right now, she tends to be doing okay. You know, she seems to be doing okay right now. You know, she's on an undefeated streak. And she defeated Sam Hughes. I thought it was a close fight. She's got a Jillian Robertson fight coming up. So, you know, she's gaining that experience right now. You know, still time will tell how she'll do as a rising contender in the UFC. Lupe Godinez, same with her. You know, she won the belt, signed to the UFC right away. And Jacqueline Amram, I believe she was the only one that defended her belt. Once she won it off of Love with Young, she defended her belt one time and then, you know, went into the UFC. So yeah, she defended her belt one time, but she's another fighter that I think could have done for more experience, you know, because all of her fights were first round finishes. Okay. You know, she's fought like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in her career. Yeah, she lost her first fight, I believe. No, I'm looking at it on Tapology. Okay, she lost a grappling match. All right. But when she went into the UFC, not the UFC, when she went into MMA, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, six fights. You know, she has 6 fights in her career, and they're all first round finishes. So she has about 6 rounds of experience in her career. All right, so now she's jumping into the UFC. And that makes you say, okay, is she going to be ready for that type of fighter? Because once you get into the UFC, a lot of these girls, even on the unranked level, you know, once they show up, they won't be able to be finished in the first round like that, you know. So you got to be prepared for that. So she's another one that I think could have done to defend her belt like multiple times, especially, you know, once you're more known for one particular type of style. I think she's a, you know, solid grappler. You know, she's a good finisher. She has decent hands whenever she's on the ground, but, you know, she's another one of those, I think, specialists like Jillian Roberts. You know, she has the potential to grow as a striker, but, you know, as a well-rounded fighter, but that's kind of what I know her as, you know, a finisher on the ground. You know, she's a submission artist. So, yeah, Jacqueline Emmer, she defended her belt one time. Now you have Palastri here. Palastri, she has that potential to stick around. You know, I think it'd be wise for her to do that, but I can see why some fighters don't want to. You know, I can see why they don't want to. But another reason I say that fighters should defend their belts, it's to help build a name, you know, in the underground circuit. You know, it's going to make a lot of the other organizations look at you and say, man, who's this fighter right here? And it also make the UFC want you even more, to me. It'll make them want you even more once you start building the name. And that way you can kind of negotiate a little bit more. You can kind of say, okay, I won't settle for the regular deal that some of these fighters that you just grab right away, they get, you know what I mean? Like for a Lupi, as soon as she wins the belt, boom, they sign her. How would it be if maybe like Palastri did something different and kept her belt and defended like multiple times, like 3 or 4 times, and she was doing it dominant fashion, you know, looking different every time and, you know, just looking like a good, well-rounded fighter? Then the UFC would probably they would negotiate it a little bit, but I think that type of fighter could at least say, hey, you know, I'm building my name here. You know, I'm building my name. I'm building my brand, you know, without you guys. So, hey, if you want me, you got to make it worth my while, right? Which means that even if she doesn't defend in LFA, she could go to another organization, you know, and clean up there, you know, go to Invicta FC, right? So those are just different things that I look at, you know, like why fighters should do it, you know, why fighters should in LFA should defend their belt. You know, you got to look at the experience, just teaching themselves that discipline of defending the title early on, because when you get into the ranks of the UFC, you want to carry that same energy like you are carrying a belt. You know, like every time you take on another opponent, whether they're unranked or they're number 14 or 15, you want to say, you know what, I got to, you know, this invisible belt right here, I got to keep on defending it. You know what I mean? I got to keep on defending it. So it puts you in a different mindset, That's why you see fighters like Valentina Shevchenko, you know, it's always important for them to grow as a fighter, you know, and never get caught sleeping. It's always that same mentality, right? But there is a con for some fighters. You know, you got to remember that fighters don't get paid a lot, right? Fighters don't get paid a lot. So these young hungry fighters that want to come up, they're not only hungry for the belt, but they're also hungry. You know, they are hungry. You know, they need money. So I can see why some of them jump straight to the UFC. I understand why. You know, I'm just looking at it in the long run, like what would be better for the fighters that want to be champion. You know, that's why I say it's better to defend the belt, but I can see why some don't. You know, they're in financial situations where, okay, LFA is not paying much, and as soon as you have the UFC throw the contract at them, it's like, yo, we got to get it, because the more and more, you know, fights we get in the UFC, we'll rack up more money, right? So it's not always about the belt for some of these fighters. I think it's more about, of course, the checks and just carrying the UFC brand alone, because then they feel like, okay, I can get other sponsors in other ways. You know, I can build up my Instagram following and get a few different little sponsors on here on my IG and get money that way. And that's how you see some of these WMMA fighters do. Like some of them, where they move, they don't necessarily move for championship reasons, right? They get to a certain level where it's more about IG following, where they can get other where they can get other sponsors of products and like supplements and things like that, or hell, even building their OnlyFans, right? They go that route instead of trying to go the championship route. So that route is more for them. You know, I feel like that's a smart route for them. Those fighters that are hungry for just financial reasons, you know, they need the money, you know, get the belt and then boom, move on to the UFC if that's there. So that's usually what I think some fighters are just going for. But if you're trying to look to become a complete fighter, should you defend your belt if you win it in LFA? Yeah, of course. You know, I think that's a smart thing for these fighters to do. So I think somebody like Palastri, from what I've seen from her, let me go ahead and pull up her resume here, because, you know, I've seen a few of her fights and she's fought some okay competition. She's fought some okay competition, but I still think there's room for improvement for her. You know, there definitely is. You know, she looked good Saturday night, but there's a few things that I want to see her do, you know, as she gets better. You know, she gets more and more to the game. You know, she's 11-3 right now, and she's only 24 years old. Julia Palostri's only 24 years old. So, to me, there's really no rush to jump right into the UFC, okay? So, yeah, last year she had fought Jazzy Vicious in the Contender Series. She had lost that fight. Before that, she was on a 6-fight win streak, okay? And after losing to Jazzy Vicious, she had defeated, yeah, Kalindra Faria. Yeah, I've seen her fight a couple of times. You know, she's a decent fighter. And she fought Bianca Settlemyer in LFA. She stopped her. That was a good fight. Then, yeah, she won the belt. Yeah, she won the belt in against Brenda Gotik this past Saturday. So, yeah, she's on a 3-fight win streak now. So she's fought some decent fighters. Early in her career, she lost to Valeska Machado as well. As you know, she's Invicta champion. So, yeah, she has an okay resume. You know, she has a decent resume as a fighter. But I still think it would be wise for her to try to, you know, rack up maybe at least 2 or 3 title defenses before jumping into the UFC. But I still, you know, I know how it is, man. The UFC, though, you know, whenever they see these young fighters, they're going to go ahead and offer them that contract right away. And, you know, these fighters being hungry and needing the money and just wanting to get that UFC brand on them, they're going to jump right at the opportunity, you know. So however it works out for, you know, I hope it works out for the best. But as you can see, some of these other LFA champions that made it into the UFC haven't really made like a huge statement. There is like scrappy fighters and good heart, you know, good fighters with good heart, but they haven't really, like, you know, blown us away, right? You know, Demopoulos, she snatched up the belt, but I don't think she'll necessarily snatch up the belt in the strawweight division in the UFC, right? Lupe Godinez, do y'all see her as a future UFC champion? Not at the moment for me. Jacqueline Amram, still early to tell. She looked good in LFA, but, you know, like I said, 6 first-round finishes, you're not going to go into the UFC and finish fighters like that. So I'm not sure if she's used to 3 rounds or going the distance, period. You know, going into the second round, or like, what's her endurance and her gas tank like? So there's a question mark over her. Pierre Rodriguez, young undefeated fighter. She's taking on Jillian Robertson in the next few months, you know. So the question is out for her. But like I said, you can see some fighters that don't really defend their belt and grow in a regional organization, when they come into the UFC, you know, they start finding out what their level is, you know. But when you look at a fighter like Manon, who won multiple organizations, you know, she won that EFC, UAE, and I believe another one. You see her, like, she's undefeated in the UFC right now. She's the number one contender, right? You can see like a difference between levels of fighters. Like, she might have not defended her belt multiple times in these organizations, but she won multiple world titles in these underground organizations. So to me, that's similar. Like, if you're not going to defend your belt in one underground organization, a regional organization, then you should probably try to win multiple ones, you know, around the way. Bellator, Invicta, LFA, Cage Fury, whatever, you know what I mean? Just something like that. But yeah, that was just something that I wanted to talk a little bit about. That was like something that's kind of always crossed my mind. Like, every time I see these young fighters, they grab that belt, as soon as that contract is thrown at them, you know, it's like, boom, we taking it. You know, I can understand the hate to turn it down. Like I said, it's financial reasons and probably just feeling like the UFC won't reach back out to them as well, you know. So, yeah, let me know, guys, what y'all think in the comment section. Should LFA champions or just regional circuit champions, period, should they defend their titles? You know, should they defend their titles at least two or three times before they try to get signed to the UFC? All right. So moving on, still talking title talks. Let's jump to this fight that's coming up next month. Valentina Shevchenko and Alexa Grasso. I'm getting a little bit more excited for this one. I mean, maybe it's because of the talk, maybe because a lot of people are feeling like that Grasso has this big chance, and it's kind of making things a little bit interesting. Now, y'all aren't hypnotizing me like y'all done with Macy Barber, Montana De La Rosa, and you're not going to hypnotize me like you did with or try to with Jessica Andrade versus Cynthia Calvillo. I don't know what I was thinking. I was about to pick Cynthia. Look, I like Cynthia. Y'all know I like Calvillo, but picking her against Andrade, I don't know what y'all were thinking. But, you know, I had to jump back on Andrade train for that one. But anyways, yeah, with this one, I mean, I ain't going crazy with this fight, but I'm just a little curious as to what a lot of people are seeing here, you know, in Alexa Grasso that makes them believe that that she has this big chance against Valentina, right? That's what I want to know. So I just, you know, was going back looking at some footage of Alexa Grasso, just doing some studying and saying Grasso's chances are a little bit slim. You know, I want to say they're higher than some of these last few people that she fought, you know, higher than Chikagian, higher than Andrade, but there's still something I feel like is lacking in Grasso. And it's not necessarily the technical skills here, okay? It's definitely not the technical skills here because I believe that what she's been working on technically is some she has some dimensions to her that could really give Valentina a tough fight, in my opinion. You know, I think she has grown in the clinch department. I think she's been growing into the division, you know, physically. I think that her body has been filling out into the flyweight division. Her frame has been getting a little bit bigger. I think, yeah, she's physically stronger. She's been improving on the ground. She's been working on her grappling, and she's a natural boxer. You know, first of all, her striking, you know, and her kickboxing, I think, is on a high level, okay? I just think that the things that could make it very, very, a very, very ugly fight for her, or, you know, a very dominant stoppage loss could be the fact that she doesn't have that killer instinct that Valentina has. Okay. That's why I think her chances are kind of slim because of just the lack of pulling the trigger. Like, technically, she's a good fighter. You know, Grasso's a good fighter. You know, she throws pretty punches, throws some nice kicks, has some nice footwork. You know, she does a lot of good things in there, you know, but I think she just sits back and admires her punches too much, or she just kind of pulls back on her strikes and she doesn't go for the gusto, you know. She doesn't go straight for it sometimes, you know, and I think that's why a lot of fighters still had good chances to beat her in there, you know. So when you go in there fighting somebody like Valentina Shevchenko, you've got to get her respect. Like, you've got to get her respect more than with just technical skills. Like, Valentina, she's the master chess player at flyweight. You know, she'll play chess with you all day, right? So if you want to hang back and play that game, you know, she's built for that. You know, she prefer that more because, you know, she's a fighter that doesn't want to take punishment, right? She's a fighter that can fight at that slow pace, that economical pace, and pick her shots. You can boo whatever you want, but she's going to do her. Like, people started booing in the Lauren Murphy fight, but Valentina stayed on it. Eventually, she turned it up whenever Lauren Murphy offered nothing, but she couldn't offer anything. But other than that, you know, Valentina stays at this pace of a chess match. So for Alexa Grasso, you know, to me, you got to have that that you got to have that dog in you. You know, you got to have that dog plus what you're bringing technically, you know, because you got to get under Valentina's skin. I think whenever a fighter starts to really show that they want it and they want to hit Valentina and hurt her, it puts her in a different mind state. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at her mentality when she fights Amanda Nunes, you know, it makes the beast come out of her, but at the same time, she has to respect you, you know? So Grasso has to bring more than just some technical skills and sit in her boxing. You know, a lot of people think her boxing is going to win her this fight, but I don't think so. You know, Valentina Shevchenko can box. And the thing is, like, Valentina may not be, she may have not been like a high level boxer. And she may have not been a boxing champion like Holly Holm, but you see in MMA, she beat Holly Holm. Okay. So she brought the right fundamentals over from boxing into the world of MMA even better than Holly Holm did. You know what I mean? Like, you know what, you really know, go back and look at some of Holly Holm's boxing matches, and then look at how she transitions some of her fundamentals over in MMA, and then go back and look at Valentina, if you can find some of her boxing matches, but look at some other boxers, and then look at how she makes her moves, you know, like the timing that she's brought over, like how she measures with her eyes, how she's studying your shoulder movements and your foot position, and, you know, just little things like that, and how she's inching forward, you know, like some of these boxers do, you know, she's and how she sets traps. Like, she brought these other little fundamentals over that I don't think a lot of people are using. Like, yeah, you can come in, okay, like a traditional boxer upstairs, and come in with that type of boxing swag, but that's not going to be enough. You know, it's about taking those little details that other fighters don't pay attention to it and using it to the best of your ability. And that's what Valentina does. That's why I think that the boxing IQ of Grasso is not going to just purely win her this fight, because Valentina is going to understand and knows what she does. You know, she's going to see, okay, this girl's trying to box me. Okay, I know what she's going for here. You know how she's bobbing her head up and down. I'm going to set her up. I'm going to get her to walk right into the straight left hand. You know what I mean? Just little things like that. I understand that Valentina's already going to be looking for. So, you know, Grasso's going to have to do more than just try to purely box her from the outside or purely strike her from the outside. You know, she's got to have some level of physical strength. You know, she's got to get in there and get dirty with Valentina. You know, Valentina, everybody knows strength, physical strength, is something she possesses, but to get her respect, you have to be strong. You have to be a physically strong grappler as well, you know? So hopefully somebody like Alexa Grasso has really, really been digging deep, and they've really been kicking her behind and training her and really taking her there and exposing her in training, so she really knows what she needs to work on, right? Because that's going to be her main thing, is to really be a dog in there and be physical, and I even think have to use her grappling at times. You know, her grappling is going to be a big part of this fight, because picking her apart as a pure striker, I don't know if she's going to be able to do that. She was able to do it against a fighter like Araujo, but that just shows you what level of Araujo is on. You know, Araujo has already kind of hit that ceiling for me, you know, as far as thinking she would even be any trouble for Valentina in there, you know, especially whenever she got outpointed by Chikagin, right? So, yeah, Grasso, for me, I don't think her chances are as high as a lot of people are thinking. Like, I don't think her chances are as high as, like, Tyler Santos was. I mean, I think you guys already know that. And it's not because I don't like Alexa Grasso. I like Alexa Grasso as a fighter. I think she's entertaining, but it comes down to style and just comes down to momentum. You know, it just comes down to the momentum of fighters. Like, I never put Alexa Grasso on my quadruple threat for a reason. You know, these other fighters I have put because there's something about them that's not just purely technical, but about their grit and about how they fight that makes me feel like they would give the champion trouble, you know? So when you look at, like, Tyler Santos, yeah, I gave Tyler Santos a good chance of beating her. Did I pick her to beat her? I was like, well, I think she could, but now I still have to pick Valentina. Like, if she doesn't, she's going to give Valentina a hell of a fight. That was the best way I could put it, because I still had to respect Valentina's level and what she's done and how many times she's defended her belt. So it was still hard to just say Santos would do it, but I knew that Santos could give Valentina some trouble. And I had her chances were high. The chances were high because of the backbone she was bringing in and the grit and the physical strength she was bringing. I even think Manon's chances are high. I don't care what people say. You know, if people say, oh, she's ducking, oh, she didn't just go ahead and accept the fight. You know, I think whenever she comes back, you know, I think that Manon brings that type of demeanor and that type of fighting style that would give her a higher chance against Valentina than Grasso. Yeah, Grasso may be a technically better boxer than Manon, but I think that Manon is much more of a versatile fighter with some of the things she does on her feet and what she's been working on. And just with her size and her physical strength, she'll probably take more chances. And just how she fights, you know, just how she's been fighting throughout her career. You know, she's only had one loss, but you see how she's fought her way up the rankings in the UFC. Like, she hasn't stopped everybody in the UFC, but she's won all of those fights in the dominant fashion. Like, she's always out to win rounds. Like, even if she's not knocking people out, she's still not sitting back. Even in the Chikagin fight, people think that fight was a fight that didn't look great, but she was still trying. Every minute of the fight, she was still trying. There was never a moment where she took her foot off the gas. Like, if Manon hurts you, she will get you out of there. But if she doesn't hurt you, she's still just going to outpoint you and do what she has to do to win. Versus, like, when I look back at Alexa Grasso's fights, you hurt Carla Esparza, why didn't you finish? Okay? Why didn't you finish that type of fight? Jinyoung Kim, another fighter. I feel like she could have got her out of there. Carolina Kovacevic, these are fighters I think she could have sat down on her punches and got them out of there. Macy Barber, another fighter. I think she put on a good performance against her, but I think that she let off the gas in that third round. You know, she let off the gas in the third round, which is something I don't want to see. You know, she gave her a round. See, with the way Manon fights, she's not fighting to give anybody rounds. If she was to lose a round, it'd be because she lost a round, right? But other than that, it's not because she's giving fighters a chance. Like, when I see Manon, whenever I saw it, she lost that one round against Caitlin Chikagin. She clearly lost it because she let Chikagin outpoint her that round, right? Can't remember which round it was, but she got outpointed that round. So that made me say, okay, that's something she got to work on. But whenever Grasso lets her foot off the gas in some of these rounds, I'm like, what is she doing? You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be losing this round. Like, again, the Macy Barber fight, I'm like, you can win this round. There's no Macy Barber's not doing anything special here that you should be losing this round. Okay. So it's those things like that make me say the chances that Manon has are higher because she's always fighting. You know, she's always fighting in a round after round to win that dominant factor. She still carries that dominant factor. I believe she does. I believe she still carries it. You know, Grasso carries more of the technical style, but she's just not that dominant to me. You know, she's just not fighting with that dominant bone like Tyler Santos or even like Aaron Blanchfield. Again, no knock to her skills, but it's just the fact that we haven't seen her go in there and finish too many fighters. Like, JoJo's the only fighter she finished out of her 6 years in the UFC. Okay? So I'm just kind of measuring that fashion. So, yeah, I just don't think that she's going to bring, like, this high level of chance and threat to Valentina like the other girls I put in my quadruple threat. You know, the top three in the quadruple threat right now, which is, you know, Manon, Tyler, and Aaron. I think those fighters, you know, they bring that respect mode all day long. I mean, who knows, though? Alexa Grasso could do something crazy. She could do something crazy. This is MMA, but I just don't see her chances being that high. I know some of y'all think it is because y'all want to see a new champion, but I'm just being real. You know, I hope she puts up a good fight. I really do. You know, I think she has some good technical skills in there that could be, you know, a new look for Valentina. But as far as her being that killer, that's the thing that she's lacking that just takes away her chances of me, you know. Yeah, and that's just how I see it. All right. So, yeah. Moving on, though, guys, let's talk a little bit about. Hang on 1 second. Let me fix one thing here. All right. Just want to pull up one more thing here. Because this fighter here. Well, maybe I'll talk about this in another video. I was going to do a little comparison with Alexi Grasso and another fighter. So I'll hold off on that one. Yeah. Let me know in the comment section what you guys think, though. What are Alexi Grasso's chances for real, though? You know, for real. For real. Stop trying to hypnotize me. I'm not going to fall for it. I'm not going to fall for that anymore. All right. But yeah. Next topic. Let's talk a little bit about Amanda Nunes here. Let's talk about Amanda. What's going on with Amanda Nunes? What's really going on? Like, what is her plan at this point? And I ask that for some of y'all that don't know, because I know some of y'all still didn't know that Irene Aldana is no longer in talks to be her opponent. This fight was supposed to be on the card coming up with Grasso and Shevchenko. But according to Amanda Nunes, she feels like Aldana should fight Pena, okay? So she doesn't want to fight her, and she doesn't want to fight Juliana Pena. She says, okay, Juliana Pena, I don't want that fight, so make them two fight. Make them two fight for the title as a title eliminator. But, of course, Pena don't want that fight either. Pena said, I ain't fighting for nothing but the belt, nothing less than the belt, okay? So that leaves Irene Aldana kind of high and dry, or does it? Nope. She's taking on a fighter she's fought before in Rocky Pennington. Now, all because Amanda Nunes doesn't want to fight Irene Aldana or Juliana Pena right now. So if she's not going to fight either of them fighters, who is she going to fight? What is her plan right now? And my answer to that question is, I really don't know. I really don't know, because Amanda's almost acting like some of these boxers out here right now, where they fight once a year, if that, maybe twice a year if you're lucky. And they have big fights ahead of them, or big fights that could be made, but they're nowhere to be found. No dates, no contracts. They're in the same divisions, but they can't come to an agreement, right? So I think Amanda's kind of like in one of those positions now. Now that she's a champion, she's just one of those champions doing comfortable things now. And I don't think that's good for a division. I don't think that's good for MMA, period, but it's definitely not good for the bantamweight division, especially with the position and the state that bantamweight is in right now. You know, bantamweight in the UFC for the women is it's a division on life support right now. If we consider the featherweight division dead, then the bantamweight division is, you know, in need of it's in need of some mouth-to-mouth resuscitation right now. And Amanda Nunes, she is not giving it that right now. She's doing her, and she's doing other things outside of the cage, and she's calling shots that I believe she should be calling right now, and that's why it's kind of got the division where it is right now. You know, she's not being an active champion anymore, so we won't get a lot of great fights. You know, I'm not saying she's the only one here, because we got a lot of older fighters here now. You know, got a lot of older fighters in the division. But when you don't have matches being made, it makes it even worse, because now the belt's not either. It's not being defended. Because if she was defending the belt, we couldn't argue. We could say, okay, she's gonna go in here and start another fighter. Well, we just wait for somebody to come along, right? But if somebody was to go in there and beat her, then things shake up. People start looking again. Heads start turning. Then we start talking about, hey, who do we have? Then maybe the UFC starts saying, okay, we got to sign new fighters, right? So what she's doing right now is just not good, man, because you have fighters to fight. And it makes people kind of look at you as a champion, kind of side-eyed now. I mean, we can't question what you've done already, but it makes us say, like, okay, you're getting lazy now. And for the fight world, everybody is like, what have you done for me lately? They'll remember what you've done somewhat, but when you're not providing entertainment, because it's still entertainment, you know, people start to get pissed off. They start to get pissed off. They're like, hey, well, you want us to pay for these pay-per-views? You want us to pay for ESPN Plus? Hey, you got to show up and fight, right? You can't be holding up this belt. I want to see this bantamweight division belt defended, okay? So that's something that Amanda Nunes has taken consideration right now, you know, because you have fighters to fight. Like, making Irene fight Rocky a second time shouldn't even be happening. That should be a no-go, okay? Like, we've seen that fight before, but we still haven't seen Pena versus Aldana, and we haven't seen Nunes Aldana, right? Those are two good fights right there we haven't seen, you know? So those are great options. So Amanda doing what she was doing just kind of cheated the fans out of two potential good fights. Well, Pena too, because she won't fight Aldana. They just kind of cheated out of two fights that we haven't seen. Now we got to go back and see a repeat, and it might kill Aldana's chances or Rocky's chances for a belt, however they feel, because it's like they probably feel like they were in good position, in good standing for a title shot, right? There should be no reason for them to even fight like this interim title, right? So yeah, Amanda's just kind of screwing this division up a little bit here, man. She really is, man. So I don't know why though. Is she just holding out now because of an injury, or is she holding out for more money, or is she really just narrowing it down to maybe one or two fights to where she's going to retire? And hopefully it is the latter right now, because, you know, with what she's done for the division, I think it's a great thing. It was great. She's done great things. That's it. And if she is starting to narrow it down and wind it down now to the end of her career, I think that, you know, she needs to start going ahead and lining that thing up, you know, go ahead and start saying, okay, we got to get these fights out of the way, and that's it. But right now, this belt hasn't been defended, you know, since she won it back. And it's the first quarter of 2023. We had a nice setup. Why not go ahead and defend it on this card? It was a perfect turnaround to maybe end your career off with a rubber match with Valentina. You know, what could it be? I really don't know. I mean, the obvious things, like I said, it could be because, you know, she's just playing that game now because, you know, she's a double champ where she feels like she can sit back and call the shots and handpick her opponents. Or it could be the money thing, or it could be an injury thing. You know, it could be where, like I said, where she's just trying to schedule it out where she wants to retire pretty soon, you know, get the fights that she wants, and then boom, call it quits. But could it be a return to featherweight? I doubt it. I mean, there's nobody there for her to fight at featherweight. Chelsea Chandler just announced her fight in April with Danielle Wolfe, you know, but that's not a title eliminator, you know. Norma Dumont, to me, still is not in a position to put up a good fight with Valentina at featherweight. With Nunes at featherweight. So Amanda Nunes, you know, she's really just in a position, I think, to go back and, you know, probably cap her career off at 135. So whatever she's doing, it's not good. It's just not good for the division, man. You know, you got to go in there and take on one of these fights. Hell, if it's Pena for a third time, let it be that. At least give us something, you know, in the meantime. But the Irene fight to me was just a different look, and it would have been a good matchup, you know. But let me know, guys, what y'all think, man. I just don't think that what Amanda Nunes, whatever she's doing, is really good for the division. That's just how I feel. You know, some people ask me about it. I don't understand it. I really don't right now. But moving on, guys, let's talk Yasmin Arigi a little bit. Yeah, like I said the other day, we were talking about Yasmin Arigi in a live stream. I believe it was last Saturday now. And I know the question was, is Yasmin Arigi being like pampered, or is she being fed easy fighters? Is she being pushed easier compared to other fighters, like, say, Pierre Rodriguez? And in my opinion, it's too early to say, like, a fighter like Yasmin Arigi is being pushed easy, because she's a fighter that has fought a pretty good competitive career early on. You know, she went to Combate, won their strawweight tournament, you know, fought multiple fights that night, got a few finishes as well. She's always been growing as a fighter. You know, she's been putting in the training, working with the best as well, even on this level. So I think at 10-0, you know, she's pretty much earned that. You know, I think she has really earned that. I don't think that matchmakers have been giving her anything or making her fight easy fights. Of course, when you first come into the UFC, the first couple of fights will kind of look that way because you are like a she did come in as kind of a dominant fighter. You know, she came in as a dominant fighter from the organization that she was in. So some of the lesser fighters that you come in and get tested against, you might go in there and beat them easy. But we can't really even say that about her. You know, we can't even really say, like, for Manon, when she came in, yeah, she destroyed Victoria Leonardo in a mismatch in Tabitha Ricci, right? But when you look at Yasmin Hariri, she necessarily didn't come in that way, like she was being padded up, because when she fought Yasmin Lucindo, you know, Yasmin Lucindo put up a good fight with her, right? So that made us kind of say, okay, this girl still has some levels to work on as well, right? She's still going to have to step it up. I think there's just some really good things about her that we see, you know, that if she really starts to nurture those disciplines right, then, yeah, we could definitely see her climb that ladder in the UFC. She seems like the most promising one because of her physical strength and that dominant factor that she carries. And see, that's the thing, like, that dominant factor is a big thing, you know, because that dominant factor that a fighter carries, I believe, is what really helps them grow as a fighter and helps them build an IQ, because they say, okay, how am I going to start owning these fighters in the ring? How am I going to start getting more respect? Well, we're going to have to start slowing it down a little bit. We have to start picking our punches. We have to start worrying about the other deep defense. Okay. You know, I think that's why she's has trained with fighters like Valentina and Pavel. You know, Pavel is a trainer. You know, she's trained with those type of fighters, you know. So early on, you might see her in there brawling a little bit, or you might see her go in there and fight those type of fighters like Stella Nunes. But even then, those type of fighters, they gave her some work, you know. So I can't really say that, you know, she's being like overrated or being fed this padded record. But the other thing I just wanted to talk about is that there's a difference between overhyping a fighter and there's a difference between the UFC overhyping a fighter and the UFC moving a fighter the correct way. Because remember, this is still entertainment, and the UFC still wants to push certain fighters they can believe are superstars. So if you have that question on why is she being seen as a fighter that we want to push, or is she being pampered, if you will, look at what she's bringing to the table. Look at what she's bringing to the table. Don't just look at it in the martial arts way. I mean, look at it as an entertainment level as well. This is the UFC. It's entertainment. It's mostly entertainment, right? Because of the way Dana White pushes this organization, right? He's looking for the next Ronda Rousey or the next Conor McGregor. And Yasmin Hariri has a big following. You know, she has a good look about her. You know, you see she models. And she can fight. So the UFC, if they feel like they want to move her a certain way, they might just do that. And it's not just because, oh, we just handpicked because of that. No, they do that because it's usually going to be, they feel like it's going to be a good look for the sport, period. Like in a sport like WMMA that has trouble getting a big following, you know, they want to bring in more fans by using certain type of fighters that have a certain type of look. You know, and Yasmin Hariri, she's a nice looking fighter and she can fight. Right. So they have to capitalize off of that by moving her in a way where she can look entertaining against certain type of styles. So, yes, she might get matched up for that reason, you know, not just getting fed cans, but as people say, but, you know, they're going to match her up with fighters that could be tough, but a style that could kind of play into her style. Like I said, the Yasmin Lucindo fight was a tough fight, but it was an entertaining fight for her. You know, it was an entertaining fight for her. It could still build up her stock in that way. You know, it makes her look good, shows she has heart and grit, and it's entertaining to the fans. Everybody loved that fight, right? You know, it's not necessarily giving her an easy fight or giving her a fight because she can't deal with grapplers. No, it's giving her a fight like that because, you know, it plays into her style and it makes for entertaining matches. Now, eventually, yeah, they'll give her some grapplers. Yeah, because she's going to want them, because eventually she's going to have to fight for the belt at some point if she gets there, right? Or she's going to have to fight those type of fighters to prove she's a top five fighter, you know? So, you know, the UFC is a business. So if they were to move her a certain way. So what? You know, they look for stars. They want good fighters, but they want stars. You know, it's martial arts, but a lot of it is entertainment. Like I said, fighters like Ronda Rose, Alexa Grasso, they have that star power, but they've all fought dangerous competition, right? So don't think that Yasmin Lucindo, she's not going to run into tough fights in her career. You know, this is the UFC. The UFC has tough fighters. So eventually she will run into somebody. I mean, Rose, everybody thought she was going to be the next Ronda Rousey. Look, she goes in there, fights Carla Esparza, boom, she gets finished, right? After that, you know, she goes in there, fights other fighters. They gave her fighters like Paige. She beats her. Angela Hill, she can beat her. But eventually, again, they gave her Carolina Kovacevic. She lost to her, right? Then she comes back and beats Joanna, right? So some of these girls like that, you know, they're gonna get moved a certain way, but they're still going to get tough fighters. They're still going to get tough fighters. And I still think Yasmin Harigi, no matter what the UFC is saying about her or as far as like her being the next big thing, it's not going to her head, because she herself said that I'm not in a rush to get into the top 15, you know? So a fighter like that, you got to love that mentality. She's not in a rush to get to the top 15. Cause like she said, I want to earn it. I want to grow. I want to get better as a fighter. So that's letting you know right away. She wants to be prepared for whatever, like if the UFC does want to throw certain styles at her, she's ready for that. You know, whatever it is, she wants to be ready for it. So understand that, man, like whenever fighters are moved certain ways versus another, yeah, some fighters will get favoritism because it's a business. You know, Wei Li's going to get favoritism because she carries a country behind her. Again, Ronda Rousey, she got favoritism because of her attitude and demeanor that she was carrying, her dominant factor, you know. So if Yasmin Harigi comes in, you know, this nice looking woman, you know, that is a model and she can fight, the UFC might take her and move her a certain way, but she's still going to be fighting good fights because you can see that she's still a fighter that wants to step it up, needs to step it up. And the way the unranked strawweights are going right now, you never know who's going to show up. So there's never really a guaranteed win for her either. People thought she was going to run through Estela Nunes. I mean, she eventually stopped her, but she got dropped in that fight, right? So, yeah, that's what it is. I mean, I think she's just doing what she needs to do. She's doing the right thing. You know, there's no hate for me. Definitely, you know, she's a fighter I'm looking forward to seeing making her way up the rankings, you know, because she's exciting. She wants to grow. You know, she has that potential to be like another Joanna, maybe even better, you know, as long as she keeps working on takedown defense. But I definitely want to see her tested, you know, for sure. You know, I want to see her get some different looks in there. And I think eventually she will. You know, I think eventually, you know, they will give her some fighters that, you know, will try to shoot for takedowns, because it's going to be needed the more she moves up the rankings, you know. But, yeah, I enjoy style. Like I said, I don't think she's being pampered versus any, you know, right now. But if they start choosing to do that, you can understand why. WMMA does need a spark of life. It needs its stars to get people to start watching it, you know. So we can't complain and say, oh, man, like, they're babying this fighter here. Nah, man, like, we do need some fighters that know how to fight and some fighters that have a certain look that's going to bring in more fans, because, you know, we can't sit here and say, oh, man, we complain about that, then complain about why WMA doesn't get promotion. Well, we need more fighters like this that have an it factor, right? So, yeah. Yeah, but that's what it is. You know, I hope she does the right thing and just keeps growing as a fighter, keep training with those champions like she's doing, training with Brandon Moreno, Valentina, you know, even trains with Angela Hill. So, yeah, I probably won't ever see her fight Angela Hill. You know, she's trained with Angela Hill. And, you know, she's just kind of always growing with her dimensions, you know. But, yeah, I do eventually want to see her test against, like, a wrestler or grappler, though, for real. Last topic, though. It is another fight week, guys, another fight week here. And we got two flyweight fights, not on the same cards. One's a Bellator card. And let me pull up the Bellator card, though. Let me see. I want to see what Bellator number it is so I can give y'all the right information to tune in to. Okay, y'all. So Bellator 290 is February 4th. That's Saturday, right? Because today is the 1st, which is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Okay, yeah. Yeah, February 4th, we've got Bellator 290, and we've got Alejandra Lara versus Diana Avsaragova. Okay. Only women's fighter on this card of 14 fights. And this is, I'm going to say it, man, this is a must win for Lara, man. You know, Lara's been disappointing me in her last few fights, man. Lara's got to step her game up. You know, she is now on a 3-fight losing streak, hasn't won a fight in, doggone, she ain't won a fight in over 3 years now since she beat Vida Arteaga, man. Dang, 2019 is the last time she's won a fight, man. So, yeah, it's time, man. It's time for Alejandra Lara to step it up, man, and show that she can get back into the mix, because Avsaragova at 5-0 is she's on the prowl. This girl's on the prowl, and she's, you know, she's making her way up the ranks in the Bellator flyweight division. Still a little green, you know, but she's going for it. You know, she kind of makes her adjustments in a fight. You know, she's got power. She can kind of measure well with that jab. You know, she's got some pretty decent hands in there. So, you know, I think Lara, you know, she's gonna have to really step it up with her ground game in this fight. Can't resort to that brawling style. You know, she's got to take this fight down to the ground, out muscle a fighter like Avsaragova. Take her to that ground, show her that level, use that strength, and only fight in the pocket if she has to, because Avsaragova got some power. You know, she's got some power. So I don't want to see her spend too much time going in there trying to trade with Avsaragova, giving her that type of fight. But yes, more of a must win for her in 9-6. Lara, 3-fight losing streak. Gotta step it up, man. Gotta step it up in this fight. I'm picking Lara to win, but if Avsaragova win, I wouldn't be surprised, and I'd be very disappointed. Because then that'll actually make Lara unranked. Because I believe she's already, what, down? She's been falling down the rankings now. She's been falling down the rankings here. After losing, you know, those last 3 fights, she's falling down there. So, this one might be it for her. You know, not out of Bellator, but, yeah, she'll be out of the rankings with this one. Avsaragova, she's still growing as a fighter at 5-0. She's been dealing with the experience level. But, like I said, when you have that hunger and that momentum, it'll help you find ways to win. That's the one thing you can't teach people, like, that's what I'm talking about, like, with the chances of Grasso beating Valentina. Like, I don't have those high chances for, because there's just that level of momentum and, like, killer instinct that I'm not seeing that's gonna get Valentina's respect in the fight, you know? So, Avsaragova could very much well have that going into a Lara fight. I'm gonna go with Lara, be experienced, but I won't be surprised, man. My run of Bellator is awful, man. Like, it's hard to pick these fights, man. You just never know who's going to show up. I'll go 0-3 in Bellator, and I'm just like, oh, well, I don't care. You know, UFC is a little bit easier, but, you know, like, Bellator, man, it's hard to pick a winner there, man. But, yeah, jumping over to the UFC, we've got Ji-Yoon Kim versus Mandy Bohm. Man, this is on the prelims of the Lewis, is it Pavlovich card? All I know, this card starts at like, main card starts at like 1 a.m. I mean, I'll probably check it out, you know, turn it on the side, because I'll be working anyway. So, it's not like, yeah, Lewis versus Spivak, sorry. Sergey Spivak. Yeah, it starts at like 1 a.m. Sunday morning. So, I'm not really going to be like calling any of this stuff. And there's only one fight anyway. But yeah, Ji-Yoon Kim is 9-6. Mandy Bohm is 7-2. She's 0-2 in the UFC right now. So, she's in a must-win situation, I believe, a little bit more than Ji-Yoon Kim, because at least Ji-Yoon Kim can still bring a little bit of a action factor. And, you know, she still brings more of a – exciting style to the UFC, I think. But even then, you never know what they would do to her. Like, they might get her up out of it. It's just like that. But I think that let me think now. Nah, she's on the chopping block too, though. Yeah, like, they're both equally on the chopping block, because she's actually lost like 4 in a row, I believe. All right, let me look up her record. Hold on, y'all. Let me go ahead and pull up her record, because I'm still thinking Ji-Yoon Kim has like that win-loss pattern. No, I think she got like loss-loss-loss pattern. Hold on, let me check. Oh yeah, man, Jinyu Kim done lost four in a row. Jinyu Kim ain't won a fight in 3 years either. Almost 4 years either. She Nadia Qassim was the last person she beat. I mean, I still get views off that video I did talking about that fight. But anyways, yeah, she lost to Grasso, Molly McCann, Cachoeira, and Jocelyn Edwards. So yeah, man, like she lost four in a row. So she's on the chop. This is a chopping block fight right here. This is a chopping block fight right here. You know, Jinyoung Kim, you know, she don't fully show up either. She can brawl and she can hit hard, but she still get she's a big flyweight too. You know, she's like 5'8", 5'7". She's long, like 72-inch reach, but she doesn't like dominate with her style and her body. You know what I mean? Like she doesn't carry like that type of movement like an Amanda, you know, doesn't like stay on the balls of her feet and like lob big power shots like that. She'll kind of hold back. That's why she gets bullied even by Molly McCann. Like Molly McCann was pushing her in that fight. Cachoeira was kind of pushing her around in that fight. I mean, she's got a good chin, but you know, she's durable. But yeah, she's another one of the fighters that just doesn't pull the trigger enough. Mandy Bohm, you know, she's one like that too. I mean, when she fought Lipsky, man, Lipsky put her in her place, man, with that power. She felt that power, had her on another level, man. She was just like, whoa, you know, I'm not used to this. She was getting hit with big right hands in that fight. Victoria Leonardo fight, she got dominated in that fight. So Mandy Bohm hasn't even shown like a level to even win in the UFC yet. You know, she's been coming out a little bit slower. Hopefully, you know, she's polishing up and she's willing to let her hands go, because she's really going to have to let it go in this fight. Because I seen her fighting Bellator, and what I seen there, if she can take it to these fights here in the UFC, man, she could have been something. You know, she could have came in there and won, man, like against Slipsky too, if she would have been a little bit more on her feet, pumping her jab out, you know, and just mixing it up with more clinch fighting. She could do that, man. But this one here, it's a must win for both of these fighters. Take your pick for this one, man. I mean, we talking Jinyoung Kim, who's 0-4 in last four fights, and 0-2 for Mandy Bohm. Both of these girls are fighting for their career, so I think it's going to turn out to be a banger. You know, I think Jinyoung Kim's going to push the fight. You know, there's going to be blood in this fight, I think, man, because they're going to really be going after it in this one, man. That both fighters are going to be trying to win and stay afloat in the UFC, because whoever loses this fight, I believe they're getting cut. I really do. I think whoever loses this fight, they're going to get cut in this one, man. So, if I had to pick in this fight, I would probably say Mandy. What I say, Mandy? What I say, Mandy? Yeah, I'm gonna say Mandy, because I think she's been working a little bit harder. And Jinyu Kim, she's big, she can hit, but she still lacks something, man. She just lacks something in there, and that's her issue, man. She won't fully grasp like the opportunity. Same can be said for Mandy. So I'm not putting money on this fight. I don't really have like this big high hopes for it anyway, because I mean they're both on losing streaks right now. I just want to see a good fight when it comes down to it. But y'all let me know what y'all think. Who you got? I'm gonna leave it as a toss-up. Only other fight I'm going for is Lara. I'm gonna go for Alejandra Lara in her fight. So yeah, guys, that's all I got on this one. Yeah, just leave your comments in the comment section about anything I talked about in this one. And yeah, I'll be back with another one next week. We'll be back on the grind, hopefully. And make sure y'all subscribe to the channel, Combo Breaker 99. Subscribe to the show on these different podcast platforms that you listen, wherever you listen to your podcast. Hashtag CB99 Talks. Just, you know, just type it in and hit subscribe one, just to support the show, man. If y'all want to see WMMA grow, you know, just support my show. Yeah, final thoughts. I think that, you know, you really, really have to have that unteachable ability. You know, you have to have those natural abilities, those unteachable abilities that just come to you sometimes to really, really be that fighter, you know, and have a great chance, you know. For somebody like Grasso, you just got to have that grit. It's not just all about technique. I mean, it is and it isn't, But you have to have that go get him attitude in there to earn your respect, especially if you step in your game up against a fighter like Valentina. That's all, you know, that's what it's all going to come down to. To give Valentina's respect, got to go in there and bum rush to a certain level, right? But yeah, guys, that's all I got on this one. I'll catch y'all in the next one. Maybe I'll do an after show. We'll see. Combo Breaker 99. I'm out. Subscribe. Peace.